Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
Well, it's December the 13th, 2017, the day after the Alabama election, and it certainly is Christmas in D.C. The swamp is celebrating after that election last night. Soros got what he wanted. The Democrat Party got what they wanted. Mitch McConnell and the GOP establishment got exactly what they wanted. So they're celebrating. They're popping out the corks. I'm sure they're probably not up yet this morning because they're probably partying late into the night last night. As a matter of fact, we may have some new sexual assault charges that eventually surface from last night's victory. Who knows? They're partying hard. We're going to talk about what happened. We're going to dissect what happened. We're going to talk about what might even happen next. I mean, Roy Moore, as of this moment, has not conceded and saying that the military votes have not been counted. It's a close election. It's about 22,000 votes in the margin of victory. He said the military votes are not there. In order for it to trigger a recount, it would have to get to a 0.5% for there to be an automatic recount. If that doesn't happen, the Secretary of State in Alabama says he's not doing a recount. He says if Roy Moore wants to pay for one, he can do it. I don't know if he's got the money to pay for that or if he would do that. The other part of this that I think will be interesting, if we take a look at it, is the big voter push. I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. There was a deadline to get felons registered in Alabama. And yes, previously, convicted felons could not vote. They had a one individual that they were talking about. As a matter of fact, there was a pastor who was going around registering felons to vote. One individual who was registered to vote was in jail at the time. Three-time loser, burglaries and other things. So anyway, maybe, Chris, they're not going to take that out. They changed the law to allow most convicted felons. They exclude a few things that they could not vote. But you've got people voting in jail, which they've counted, I'm sure. Military, not so much. Not so much with the military. We're also going to have some comments and a video from an executive who says, former Facebook executive, says that Facebook is ripping apart the social fabric of society. Uh-huh, it is. And we need to take a look at that. He's going to talk about why, like Steve Jobs, he will not let his kids get near this stuff. You should think about this as well. And not only just your kids, your life as well. We talked about the misery index that some UK mathematicians came up with as kind of a joke. But the general issue was the more time you spend on social media, on games, on television, the more miserable you're going to be in your personal life and in your family life. We know that from a qualitative standpoint, but I think it's good to hear this from a Facebook executive. And there is a lot of economic news here. You know, we still, from all of those wizards in the GOP establishment, we still haven't gotten a tax bill that makes any sense. Some of the details that they put in there as they rush this through at the last minute, like failing college students cramming for an exam the day before. They came up with some tax rates for some individuals that are marginal rates of more than 100%. How's that for soaking the rich? The Democrats would be proud. They never got anything. See, sometimes you can get stuff through with status Republicans that you could never get through with status Democrats. That's one of the reasons why I say this is not over. They're saying this is the end for the revolution that Bannon and others and we've been pushing. I don't think so. You're going to have some battles that you win and some that you lose. And the empire is going to strike back, especially on Star Wars week. But this is a fight that we have to win. And I think it's a good thing to know who your friends are, who your enemies are. People in Alabama still don't know Doug Jones. How much did you see the press talk about Doug Jones? Did they ever talk about his Soros connections? They ever talk about the big money behind Evan McMullen and the other Never Trumpers that were pouring that money in? Did they ever talk about the $30 million that the GOP establishment spent at the primary and still couldn't defeat Roy Moore? You think that Luther Strange could have won? Maybe he could have, because they wouldn't have invented some fake sexual harassment news to take him down. We'll talk about that when we come back, as well as headline news. Stay with us. I'm David Knight.
Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back on this Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. Let's talk about the elephant in the room after the election last night. And that elephant is Mitch McConnell, who has his long nose under the tent, under your tent, under my tent. You know, we look at the headlines and it's like, well, you know, as Matt Drudge said, Luther Strange would have won. Well, I don't know. Luther Strange couldn't beat Roy Moore with $30 million of Mitch McConnell's money, could he? And what does it mean to win? What does it mean to win? Does that mean that you've got somebody with an R after their name? Does that mean that you've got somebody who is a Mitch McConnell puppet instead of a Schumer puppet? I don't really see much advantage in that. And, you know, we talk about this is just too much crazy. Well, I think that the definition of crazy is to continue to elect the same GOP uniparty establishment that have given us the problem that we have today. Continue to do that same thing and think that you're going to get different results. That's not winning. Winning means that we make government smaller. Winning means that we follow the Constitution. Winning means that we understand that we don't have privileges granted by government, but we have rights from God. Individual rights from our Creator. That was the principle on which this country was founded on. And that is something that causes people like Chuck Todd to flip out, as he said, look at this. Roy Moore says that rights don't come from government, that they come from God. Well, that's what our founders said. And if you don't believe in God, understand that then is natural rights. And when you talk about natural rights, as Clarence Thomas did, people like Joe Biden, go back and take a look at the hearings of Clarence Thomas. They, first of all, had a big problem with Clarence Thomas saying that we had natural rights as human beings. We had rights that transcended the government, that we created government to protect those rights, not to grant us those rights. Joe Biden was apoplectic about that, just as you saw Chuck Todd be apoplectic that Roy Moore would have the audacity to say something like that. Don't be afraid of people who fear God. Be afraid of people who think they're God. And that's what we have in Washington in spades, in the Democrat Party and in the Republican Party. And if you want to look at what happened in this election, after they were upset about the fact that Clarence Thomas didn't think that government was God, what did they do? They came after him with Anita Hill, the first sexual harassment charges, the first he said, she said. And it wasn't a serious charge, but they took it very, very seriously. It was workplace sexual harassment. It was disqualifying, they felt. All the I believe Anita buttons. And yet within a couple of years, Anita Hill was supporting Bill Clinton against the charges of Juanita Broderick, wasn't she? She and Gloria Steinem, both of them. And so as we look at this Me Too moment, and I'm going to tell you later in the broadcast as we get to it after we talk about the election last night, Me Too, hashtag Me Too. Yes, yes, let's all air this. And this is an effort to add men as all being harassers. Just as if you're white, you're racist. If you're a man, you're a harasser. At the very least, you're a harasser. Maybe you're a rapist. You know, racist, rapist, racist, rapist. That's what they're going to do with everybody. That is the F word of the left, isn't it? They don't have an argument. What they do when you show up at a rally. If you're white, they call you a racist. Or if you're male, they call you a sexist. If you're straight, they call you homophobic or Islamophobic if you're a Christian. They don't have an argument. They have labels that they apply to people. And they cry wolf. You know, there really are people who are racist. There really are people who are rapists. And this hashtag MeToo movement is going to be a cry wolf moment that is really going to shut down the reality of that. It's going to harden people to the real charges of racism, of sexual assault and rape. But they're going to be fine with that. They don't care because all men are going to be guilty. You're going to find here's my prediction. You're going to have nothing but women running in the Democrat Party. You're going to have nothing but women. They're basically, it's a woman's party now anyway, has been for a while. And they're not even going to try to run men as candidates. They're so done with men. And all men are going to be tainted with the same brush that they paint white people with now. It's going to be institutionalized wolf crying, if you will. That's where this is headed. It is going to be a Me 2.0 because they're going to come after President Trump. So the Me Too is going to become Me 2.0. They're rehashing even the same allegations that were there before the election that people didn't find credible. This is coming from Bernie Sanders. It's coming from Megyn Kelly. It is a movement that has started. So they've gotten Roy Moore out of the way. And the next one in line is President Trump. And they have already started. They started a day or so before the election yesterday. And when you look at the way the fake news spins this, I would say the biggest win in this is not even the Democrat Party. I would say the biggest win in this is the fake propaganda media and how they can spin public opinion. I'm very disappointed that the people in Alabama couldn't see through these recycled attacks. The same thing that we saw against President Trump. Not only the Gloria Allred piling on with unprovable allegations, but even then write-in candidates coming in, as we saw with Evan McMullen in Utah. And guess what? Evan McMullen was back there with Soros money. He was there in Alabama, big money being poured into that race. If you don't understand who these people are, and if you don't understand what they are capable of, we're never going to get our country back. And so it's kind of the fake news spin. And let me give you an example of this. Daily Mail, great example of this article here. Vet friend of Roy Moore, Vietnam vet, admits that they went to an underage Vietnam brothel, but they left immediately. Okay. So was that an admission that Roy Moore was going to an underage Vietnam brothel? Now, if you go back and look at what this guy's been saying for a month supporting Roy Moore, he says there's absolutely no way that the Roy Moore that I know did this. He had said when we went to Vietnam, he said the two of us had a third guy say, hey, come with me, let's go to some place or whatever. And they tagged along. Once they got there and realized it was a brothel, Roy Moore was the one who said, we can't stay here, I'm leaving. And so he left with Roy Moore, and he realized at that point in time what Roy Moore was made of. Look, if you're in the military and you're somewhere where nobody knows you, nobody is watching you, if you are at all inclined to something like that, you're going to do it then, aren't you? Only if you think that God is watching you are you not going to do that. See, character is what you do when nobody is watching you. And nobody was watching Roy Moore in Vietnam. But what'd they do? They spun this around and say, look, he goes to underage Vietnam brothels. It's like, no, when somebody took him there, he left and took the other guy that was with him out of there. And that guy testified for him 40, 50 years later. That's the way the mainstream media spun this. That's the way they lied about this. And so will there be a recount? There's a 1.5% difference right now between the two candidates. There is a recount triggered only if there is a 0.5% difference. So right now, the number of votes is about 22,000 separating the two candidates. Now, the interesting thing I find out about this is that one of the reasons that Roy Moore said, I'm not going to concede yet, is because I said the military votes haven't been counted. Now, I have no idea how many military votes there are. I know that in general, the South sends more people into the military than most other regions. But I don't know. I mean, they would have to have a 14,000 vote advantage to pull this down to within 7,000, which would trigger a recount, according to my rough estimates here. So would that happen? I don't know. But I do find this interesting. I find it interesting that they haven't counted the military votes, but they have counted the felon vote. And you think that I'm stretching this? Alabama, this is not a conservative site. This is AL.com, Alabama.com. Thousands of Alabama felons registered to vote in a last-minute push, just like the Democrats did in Virginia. And this is Pastor Kenneth Glasgow heading a statewide effort and bragging about how many felons he was able to get registered. Some of them while still in prison. They changed the laws. They allowed felons to vote for this election. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The world is so long.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this December the 13th. War is over if you want it. Do you? I don't think so. I don't even think you want your freedom. I think you want to be promised safety and security and a soft life. I don't think you want freedom. I don't think you want peace. I don't see any sign of this. I don't see any sign of anything changing in Washington at the moment with the establishment that we've got there. What does it mean to win? What does it mean to win? Does it mean we throw these criminals out, these rascals, and we put them in prison? Does that mean that we win? Does it mean that we win when we get somebody? Would it have been a victory to have Luther Strange stay? It's not a victory if Mitch McConnell stays. If we get more people like Tom Tillis from North Carolina, the statist that I saw when I was there, those people aren't going to change anything. And they're no different from the Democrats, quite frankly. So let's at least get some Democrats in so we know who the enemies are. I'm tired of false flag politicians. I'm tired of the Luther Stranges. I'm tired of the Mitch McConnells. I'm tired of the Paul Ryans. Let's get some honest socialists in there so we understand where this crap is coming from. And let's stop blaming free market for this, because the Republicans come in dressed in the mantle of the free market and choice, individual choice, and then they trash it. Then they trash it. These cynical liars that we have seen there. So let's get some real people in who just say, hey, we're going to just double it. We're going to take all your money, and we don't care. We're going to make all the decisions for your life. Instead of the people who say, we're going to put you in trouble. We're going to get rid of Obamacare, and then they don't. Instead, they keep pushing us towards single-payer system. Let's get rid of the false flag politicians of the GOP. That's what winning means. And, of course, this is a loss. But the Empire is going to strike back, especially on Star Wars week, right? And that's what we're seeing right here. That doesn't mean we quit. That's for weak people to quit when we look at this. So maybe there will be a recount. Who knows? As I was saying, we got thousands of Alabama felons registered as they changed the law in Alabama. Here's one guy. As a matter of fact, there's a pastor who was going around registering felons in prison. He said, in the last month, I think we registered at least 5,000 to 10,000 people all over the state, said Glasgow, president of the Ordinary People Society, TOPS. We've got people all over the state registering people in my TOPS branches. So there you go. I guess maybe that's what we're waiting for, the late returns last night. We're waiting to get the prison vote. But they didn't wait for the military vote from Alabama before they declared the election over. So the prisoners get to vote, but the people who are serving in the military, nah, we don't care so much. As a matter of fact, this is all put in by the felon should-bes, not wannabes, but the politicians that should be locked up as felons. That's the real issue here. Spencer Trawick lost his voting franchise in 2015 when he was convicted of third-degree burglary. But this pastor who's going around Glasgow said in June he registered him while he was still incarcerated at the Dothan jail. Isn't that great? So there you go. That's that's how we get these kind of results here. You know, we look at the memo here from the Hill. The winners and the losers in the Alabama special. Well, the winners, the Democrat Party, or Roy Moore's accusers like the forger, the fraudster, the Gloria Allred client, Beverly Young Nelson. I mean, right up to the last minute, you've got people like Frank Luntz saying, How many accusers are there? Nine. Let's include all the fraudsters, all the people that have a personal grudge against Roy Moore, all the people that he just asked out for dates. And let's go with the retired security guard who says, yeah, we had a lookout for Roy Moore in the malls because he was asking girls out for dates in the malls. And then the mall owner says, didn't happen. But you would never know that from listening to Frank Luntz, Fox News, the rest of these people. Oh, no, it's nine people. We've got this here. That was one of the things to me that signified that it was a fraud to begin with. Of course, another winner is Mitch McConnell, obviously. You've got Soros and Schumer. They're big winners. And Evan McMullen, the Never Trumpers, all that branch. They all had a big victory yesterday. The globalists, the uniparty establishment, big victory for them. And a big victory for certain issues, too, that were not discussed, were they? No issues were discussed. Full-term abortion, which Doug Jones supports. Gun control. Government-run health care. Higher taxes. He is a Soros radical leftist who escaped any scrutiny whatsoever from the mainstream media. Boy, you talk about a bait and switch distraction. Absolutely amazing. And they say, Daily Mail is saying, Trump is furious. He's blaming Steve Bannon. Well, you know what? You're going to lose some. Was Trump furious and blaming Mitch McConnell when Mitch McConnell's handpicked puppet lost, even after he spent $30 million? I don't think that Luther Strange would have won necessarily, but I think that it wouldn't have been a win. It would have been a so what? It would have been kind of like, well, do you want Mitt Romney or do you want Barack Obama? What's the difference? They hedge their bets, don't they? See, if Luther Strange had won in the primaries, the voters wouldn't have had a choice. And the voters had a choice. And Roy Moore had defeated the GOP establishment that spent $30 million to defeat him. He was 20-plus points ahead of Doug Jones. And then the smears started. And the people fell for it. Because all the media talked about were the false charges. So that's a template for the future. And that's what should really worry President Trump. Because we're coming up to Me 2.0. Let's get the video ready of Mika Brzezinski talking. But before we get to that, an example here of Chuck Schumer. There was a false report put out to try to smear Chuck Schumer. And Axios points out that he called the cops after a forged sex scandal charge, an apparent effort to dupe reporters and to smear a senator. Ooh, were they talking about the Roy Moore election? No, they're talking about Chuck Schumer. Yeah, a smear job. Now, the Axios reporter called the person on the report, and she said in a phone interview she did not author the document. None of the charges were true. But what if she had lied? What if she had lied? What if she was in on the political smear? What will we do about that? And she said in a statement, she said, it's completely false. You can see my signature is forged. That didn't matter in the Roy Moore election, did it? Did it? Even after the woman who had represented this, oh, he signed all of this. Look, and he signed his name in a way that he never signs it. But that was all fine. Oh, no, that wasn't an issue. And then they end up with this. They say, be smart. Look for more hits like this, aimed at victimizing both reporters and public figures. Uh-huh. Yeah, it worked this time, didn't it? And it's probably going to work against President Trump, just like they put in two candidates who want to make sure we get government-controlled health care, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. They will put in multiple attacks on President Trump. It's not going to be just Russia, Russia, Russia. It's going to be Me Too, Me Too, Me Too, Me Too, Me 2.0. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We're going to talk about Me 2.0 in just a moment. The hits keep coming. And of course, now the focus is going to be solely on President Trump. And they're going to have two fronts against him now. It's not just going to be the Russia, Russia, Russia. It'll be the Me Too, Me Too, Me Too, Me 2.0. We'll get back to that in just a moment. Break this down for you. We got an amazing clip from Mika Brzezinski. And you won't believe this clip when we get to it. But anyway, let's talk about some of the specials that we have as part of our massive Christmas savings, our Merry Christmas specials at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a new product, CellForce, works powerfully to fight dangerous reactive oxygen species and toxins in your body. And we now have that at an introductory level of 50% off at $69.95. We also have Brain Force, Silver Bullet, InfoWars Life Selects Survival Food. All of those are on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. And we have a lot of other products that are 50% off. For example, Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield X2, nascent iodine, 50% off. Super Male Vitality, 50% off. Alpha Power, our introductory price, 50% off. Prostaguard, 50% off. And Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. So take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our massive Christmas savings, and we really do appreciate your support, especially this time of year. All right, let's talk about what is going on with President Trump. Of course, we had Megyn Kelly bring out the same individuals that had been accusing President Trump that the voters did not find to be credible. She brought them out again. Just keep coming. Megan's doing it. And, of course, you have Bernie Sanders at the same time. So this is a broad movement. We've had, I think it's 50 Democrat senators, mostly women, calling on President Trump to resign because of a comment that he made off mic to a member of the Bush crime family that was put out there. Interestingly enough, put out there by NBC, by Matt Lauer, by the CEO of NBC. And if you want to put this in context, find the article. I'm not going to read it to you because, quite frankly, I can't repeat on air what these people were saying in their roast of Matt Lauer. And these are the people who put out the grab them by the blank tape on President Trump. That was not anywhere near what these people were saying in their off-the-record roast of Matt Lauer. And it was men and women in that NBC meeting there. And, of course, Donald Trump was sitting there in the audience. He hears that kind of talk all the time. You know, you hear that kind of talk, you're going to repeat it and think that there's not any big deal, but then they're going to make a big deal out of it. And the American public hears that and says, that's a big deal, because they don't hear the NBC executives talking like that. But the NBC executives say, oh, I had no idea that Matt Lauer was doing that kind of stuff. And all the anchors, including his female co-anchors, would say, Matt, what a surprise. Never knew anything like that was happening here at NBC. We had no idea that he had a special button underneath his desk to lock the door when women came in. Had no idea any of that kind of stuff was going on. Totally innocent. Totally innocent. Bernie Sanders was saying on at the end of the week last week, even before Megyn Kelly pulled these people on, called on President Trump to resign over the tape that we had already seen. Before the election last time. And he's, you know, it's, I would say this. I would say maybe it's Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi who should resign. And let me tell you why they should resign. Because they have presided over a Congress for decades where sexual harassment, even up to rape, happened by congressmen and others. And they not only concealed that information, but they had you and I paying for it. And they still have that situation there. So I think the people like Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi and the rest of those people there, they should resign. They should resign over that slush fund, the Accountability Act or something like that they had there. You know, the it was the Compassionate Feminist Act. That's what they should call it. The Compassionate Feminist Fund, where they pay sexual abusers millions of dollars and conceal it from the public. We're not allowed to know who these abusers are. Nancy Pelosi knows, Bernie Sanders knows, but they're just focusing on Trump. They're the ones who should resign. It wasn't Donald Trump that paid these congressmen off with $17 million over decades. It was Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi. So why don't they just shut up? What hypocrisy, what criminality, what phony feminists they are. And of course, the media as well, Time Magazine. Juanita Broderick said, well, you're going to say Me Too is the person of the year? Where am I on the cover? Where am I on the cover? No, no, no. See, conservative women do not have a right to be heard. Black men like Clarence Thomas don't have a right to be heard. They don't have any rights. It's only the liberals who have rights here. And so then that brings us to this latest tempest in a teapot. Elizabeth Warren and Kirsten Gillibrand. And I just put this in perspective. This is an article from mrctv.org. And the writer said, I've long been intrigued by the feminist touted phrase slut shaming. Using basic deductive reasoning, the phrase suggests that in order for a woman to be slut shamed, one must assumedly be a slut, for which to, well, be ashamed of. After all, no one fat shames skinny women. The implied admission here is that women, at least have some to a noticeable degree, are a bit on the heftier side, and that's why they're being unduly mocked for it. So therefore, if you were to follow the same logic, if you were slut-shaming somebody, they must be engaged in some kind of an activity that is kind of slutty, and you're calling them on that. He says, in fact, according to the Oxford Dictionary, slut-shaming is, quote, the action or the fact of stigmatizing a woman for engaging in behavior judged to be promiscuous or sexually provocative. And so in a tweet yesterday, Senator Elizabeth Warren accused President Trump of slut-shaming Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, which I'm fairly certain means that Warren just inadvertently called Gillibrand a slut. Was this something that President Trump was talking to? He says in his tweet, lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Oh, by the way, calling her lightweight, he is not fat shaming her. Okay. Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer, someone who would come to my office begging for a campaign contribution not so long ago and would do anything for them, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked. Used. Okay. So, in response to that, Elizabeth Warren puts the chip on her shoulder and then knocks it off and says, are you really trying to bully, intimidate, and slut-shame Senator Gillibrand? Do you know who you're picking a fight with? Good luck with that, said the school marm. And she immediately reported President Trump to the principal. And here's the response from the dean of girls, Mika Brzezinski, sitting there with her metrosexual pet, Joe. And here's what she has to say about this.
President Trump just tweeted about Senator Kirsten Gillibrand after she called for him to resign yesterday amid sexual misconduct allegations. This is the President of the United States tweet. Lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them.
Is now fighting against Trump.
Oh, the
very
poodle
disloyal
speaks.
To Bill and
did
Crooked.
Did he get Mika's permission?
Used! Exclamation point.
Okay, so I just want to say something beyond the fact that is reprehensible that the President of the United States would say something so derogatory and disgusting about a woman.
Okay, let's just hold that there, because then she starts to go on a vent and the little poodle. To her left there, just sits there. Yeah, that's right. Presumably, I won't play this until she gives him a treat. But yeah, he was eating this all up. USA Today says that President Trump is not fit for office for saying, see, you're not allowed to criticize women, because if you do, you're a rapist. Just like if you disagree with them on policy, you are a racist. You're a Nazi. That's where this is headed, folks. This is where we are. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Yes, we have Elizabeth Warren calling Senator Gillibrand a slut. I just explained why that's true. And I think what President Trump was talking about was a metaphorical political prostitute who will do anything for money, any political favor you want. It wasn't a sexual favor, but a political favor. Yes, of course she'll do anything she wants. And in that sense, Chuck Schumer is a prostitute. So is Mitch McConnell. So is Paul Ryan. All those people. They have no principles. No principles whatsoever. That's why they don't want Roy Moore there or somebody like him. There are certain things that he won't do. And he won't sell himself for a political contribution. But, of course, Kirsten Gillibrand will. And he pointed that out. So she said, you're slut-shaming her. And he's like, no, I'm calling her a political prostitute. But Sarah Sanders said this. These were not sexual innuendos. Nothing sexual about it. All the politicians in Washington will do that. They'll come begging for money. Say, whatever you want, I'll stick that pork in there for you in that bill, anything you want. She said, only if your mind was in the gutter would you read it that way, said Sarah Sanders. Good for her. She said about the statement that she would do anything for money. And let me tell you, this is more of this kind of projection from the perverted left, the Hollywood left, people like Chelsea Handler, who's been projecting her perversions on Sarah Sanders for a week. You know, the kind of stuff that Chelsea Handler does, nobody in their right mind would even imagine. You had to be a total degenerate pervert to even imagine the kind of stuff that Chelsea Handler does. And then she projects that She takes her filth and slings it on Sanders. And Sanders went on and say that Trump's criticism of Gillibrand was reminding the senator of a previous trip that she'd made to his office to ask for money. Sarah Sanders said, she's controlled by special interests. She's a puppet for Chuck Schumer, none of which make her an independent individual, but more somebody that is controlled by people that help to donate money to her cause. He's not alleging anything. He's talking about the way our system functions as it is. Yes, it is, as P.J. O'Rourke said many years ago when there were very few women in Congress. He called it a parliament of whores. Nothing sexual about that, but quite accurate. Quite accurate. She went on to say that politicians repeatedly beg for money is not something new. And that comment, frankly, isn't something new. No, it isn't. Let's talk a little bit about economics. Let's talk about this tax bill that I said has been rushed through like a bunch of failing students cramming for an exam, putting in 100+% on marginal tax rates for people. Oh, it's going to be a bill to help the rich, right? They don't even know what they're doing. What a bunch of incompetent fools they are. A tale of two tax bills, said Bloomberg. How you will fare from Manhattan to Malibu. But of course, they don't know, because we've got one in the House and one in the Senate. And who knows what we're going to have when it comes out of that, because they're just going to pick and choose or change things around. And look at how much things can change. Look at how much they can change it so that instead of increasing the child tax credit for Americans, what they do is they take it and say, well, we're not going to record the Social Security number of the taxpayer. Instead, what we'll put in is the Social Security number of the child, which then means that illegal aliens, foreign citizens criminally trespassing, can get a massive subsidy for their anchor babies here. Just that little bit of a change, changing the Social Security number from the parent to the child. And when you've got Republicans in here, they say congressional Republicans in advance talks to reduce the tax rate for top earners to 37% as part of a final tax bill. They're going to say they're going to go from 39.6% to 37%, but they don't know what they're doing. So they raise some of these to more than 100%. They went from 39.6% to 100+%, according to some of the reports. And it's like, did we do that? Did we do that? I thought, Joe, you didn't do the math on that, did you? Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. Feds collect, meanwhile, this is on Drudge Report, CNS News. The feds have collected record taxes through November, but they're still running a $201 billion deficit. Where is Senator Bob Corker, who in all this discussion about taxes said, not a single penny more, not a single penny more. Well, right now we're still running a $202 billion, let's call it, because it's 201.8, a $202 billion deficit just through November. Not another penny, Bob Corker? Why don't you put a cork in it? This is the guy who sat there quietly, as he's saying nothing about this, quietly, while Barack Obama ran the total debt, the cumulative debt, up from $10 trillion to $20 trillion in just 8 years. And now he's saying, not another penny. Can't cut taxes on people. You know what? We can be glad that Luther Strange lost. Because if Luther Strange hadn't lost with Mitch McConnell and his Republican committee pumping $30 million in there, then Bob Corker wouldn't have resigned the very next day. So that's a win, folks. If there's a win here, that's the win. We got Bob Corker out. And we got a guy who is really a Democrat. And the people in Alabama are going to get it good and hard, aren't they? All these people who wanted less government, they wanted to protect human life, they wanted to protect their right to self-defense, they're going to get it good and hard because they got suckered by the attack media. And so here they are. Record taxes, but they're still running a $202 billion deficit. See, the problem is spending, and the problem is senators like Bob Corker, who is not saying anything about that, is he? Now, what's going to happen if they do, in fact, cut taxes and do increase the economy? Because you've got China, as well as five of the largest European Union governments. You've got Britain, Germany, France, Spain, others, are saying, this isn't fair. You can't cut taxes like that. You're going to have a competitive advantage. Your economy is going to grow. We've got to do something about this. You can't do that. You know, at one point in time, I remember once we went to a playground. My kids were young. And there was a little boy there. And he was out for, I think it was like a year-round school or something. He was out. He asked my sons, where do you go to school? And so we don't go to school. We're homeschooled. You don't go to school? You study at home? That's not fair. That's not fair. It was amazing. My wife and I still talk about that. He got so outraged. And that's what's happening with China and the European Union. They're looking at our tax cuts and they're saying, that's not fair. You're taking the chains off of your people. Our people are going to want that now. Or what are we going to do? We're going to have to change the trade policies here because that's not fair. It's not fair. And so, but don't worry. We've got our private Federal Reserve ready to raise the rates and keep those chains on us. And they're possibly going to do that today. They may be raising the rates today, December 13th. They're expecting a 0.25% rate hike. And there's a great article from Zero Hedge, how the Fed rate hikes impact U.S. debt slaves. That would be you and I. Outstanding revolving credit owed by consumers, such as bank-issued and private label credit cards, jumped 6.1% year over year to $9.77 billion in the third quarter, according to the Fed. And they've had four hikes of rates, and they say that, according to this article, it will cost consumers with credit cards if they add 0.25% to the interest rates, because the interest rates are tagged for credit cards, are tagged to this. It will cost consumers who are in debt with credit cards another $1.5 billion next year. This would bring the incremental costs of the five rate hikes that the Federal Reserve has done as soon as President Trump got elected. They started throttling the economy. Everybody else was looking at this, say, hey, he's going to cut regulation, he's going to cut taxes. And the Fed say, let's raise the rates on these people. So that would mean that these five rates are going to total $7.5 billion for people who have credit cards because they move with the short-term interest rates. People who with mortgages have not been affected yet because they're tied to the 10-year Treasury bill, and that hasn't really changed. But if you look at this chart, pull this chart up so people can see these interest rates. Big jumps, 100 basis points for the Fed target for credit card balances and so forth. You know what happens with your personal savings? They went down not up by a factor of 100, but they went down by negative 0.2. And TransUnion talks about this. They say they look at the number of consumers with credit balance, and they look at the total balances, and they say that that equals about $6,900 per person with a revolving credit balance. And if two people in the family have that, that would be about $14,000. If you got a 20% credit card interest rate, that's going to add $233 a month to their household expenditures. And so that just add that there with your Obamacare costs that are going up 50, 60%. Is it any wonder that people are mortgaging their homes to buy Bitcoin? I mean, people are in desperate straits. Where are they going to go? They're going to get a negative 0.2% interest rate. That's not even including the way they devalue the currency when they do that. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. More economic news and a lot of information. Actually, they fingered Alex Jones as a terrorist on television. We'll be right back.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're just talking about economics, talking about tax reform. If the GOP establishment can ever figure out what that means, they're not really sure. What does it mean to reform taxes? I mean, the reactions from China, the reactions from the European Union countries, they believe, naively, I guess, that the Republicans are really going to follow through with what President Trump has been talking about. Are they really? We don't really know what they're going to do. I mean, they're putting something together, but just as we see these unintended consequences, sloppy work raising a tax, some marginal rates by more than 100%, we'll have to see what happens with it. It's still a work in progress, but they're assuming. And this is the interesting thing. We keep hearing from the socialists in Europe, we keep hearing from the socialists in America, that tax cuts do not help the economy. And yet we've had phenomenal growth this last year on the expectation of tax cuts, not on the reality of tax cuts, but just the mere expectation. And with the mere expectation of real tax cuts, the European Union countries, as well as China, are writing angry letters to the Treasury Secretary saying, you better not do that. That's going to be unfair competition if you guys cut your taxes. But the reality is that we still have Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan in Congress, and so they may scupper the whole thing because we can't count on them to really follow through. Everybody knows, in spite of all the lies from mainstream media, in spite of all the lies from the socialists in government, everybody knows that tax cuts are good for us. They have all these articles saying, oh, see, it didn't do anything for anybody to cut taxes. It's like stealing money from people never has helped anybody either. And when you look at what's going on economically, you've got the Federal Reserve now talking about raising rates, and the rates that they would raise would have an immediate effect on anybody with credit card debt and not an immediate effect on mortgages. People are therefore mortgaging their homes because they can't make any money in the banks. The banks are not paying any interest. We have long ago gotten rid of the usury laws. They do whatever they wish. And so people are desperate to try to make ends meet. And they're mortgaging their homes to buy Bitcoin. As CBS reports, for some people, the skyrocketing value of Bitcoin is worth putting their own home at stake. We've seen mortgages being taken out to buy Bitcoin. Or people are putting it on credit card lines and equity lines. So that may be another issue there, because it has officially surpassed tulip bulb mania as the biggest bubble in world history, looking at how rapidly it has climbed in value over the last year, not in terms of trying to analyze it in terms of real dollars, but just the appreciation that it has had in such a short time. Meanwhile, the two Winklevoss twins from Facebook that were shoved out by Zuckerberg, they put some of their money into Bitcoin and reportedly have more than $1 billion that they have there. And they were calling out Jamie Dimon, the guy who has repeatedly called Bitcoin a fraud. And they said, all right, now that it's on the exchanges where you can buy and sell futures, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? Why don't you short it, Jamie Dimon, if you really don't think that it's going to go up? They're calling on him to put his money where his mouth is. We'll see what happens with that. But you know, we're talking about bubbles, and we're talking about things that are outrageously priced. How about this Uber ride in Toronto that cost $14,400 for a 20-minute rush hour ride? Yeah, that was surge pricing. And just hold that in your mind, because we're constantly told that if we give up our cars, because, you know, it's going to be so much cheaper for us to all drive around in Uber taxis, isn't it? When they have a monopoly, what do you think they're going to do? You think they're going to be shamed into refunding this overcharge of $14,000 for a 20-minute ride? No, they're not. They're not. And let me tell you something. This is the way they're going to stick it to you and I. It's going to be far worse than what the banks have done in terms of our transportation. You just won't be able to go anywhere. Nobody will be able to afford it except for the Uber elite. Maybe the Winklevoss twins can have a car. Or Zuckerberg. Maybe they can go somewhere. You and I, nah, not so much. We'll be stuck in their Agenda 21 trap. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back on this December the 13th, 2017. I'm David Knight. You know, typically we do the news in the first hour, at the top of the hour. Wanted to address the elephant in the room of the Alabama election and, of course, where they're going with baseless sexual harassment charges, because it's now set a template. These people have sensed blood in the water, and they're not going to stop. This is the beginning of a new movement for the Democrats. And if you don't believe that, just take a look at the incensed tweets from Elizabeth Warren about Kirsten Gillibrand and saying that Donald Trump was slut-shaming her. Mika Brzezinski saying, this is literal harassment. You will not be able to criticize any liberal women. Conservative women, they'll still be fair game. But you will not be able to criticize any liberal Democrat women. And, of course, it will be nothing but liberal Democrat women running for Congress. It'll all be women in that party. But you won't be able to criticize them without being called a sexist, a harasser, an assaultist. Is that a word? I don't think so. But they'll accuse you of assault. But the other news that was very interesting last night, and Matt Drudge picked up on this, is Entertainment Weekly pointing out that Homeland is now holding up Alex Jones as a model for a crazy assassin. Yeah, he's not an assassin, but they're engaged in character assassination in a very deep way. And this is the way they roll this stuff out, by putting it in dramas. And everybody knows that this character is based on Alex Jones. They call the character Brett O'Keefe. Maybe they're going after James O'Keefe as well. James O'Keefe and Alex Jones. But he acts like Alex, looks like Alex somewhat. Here's the little bit of the Homeland Season 7 trailer where they directly attack a character assassination of Alex Jones as a potential presidential assassin.
The Founding Fathers foresaw the dark day when we would face a president like her.
I work for the President of the United States.
Anyone who takes a stand for what they believe, people are going to say they're crazy. They've been calling me that for years.
Yeah, he said the Founding Fathers, in case you couldn't hear that well, he said the Founding Fathers foresaw the dark day when we would face a president like her. Like her. Oh, who was that? That was going to be Hillary Clinton. They put in a Hillary Clinton president last year. And at first, she was just wonderful. She was sympathetic. She was liberal, just like they want. And she was just the perfect Hillary Clinton figure. You know, Hillary Clinton, just like that. And then somehow, after an assassination attempt, she turns into the real Hillary Clinton. You know, an authoritarian, overreaching, civil rights abusing president who wants to go to war with everybody. She's on an authoritarian warpath, which is what Hillary Clinton would have been if she had won. Remember, Julian Assange said, look, we don't know about Donald Trump. We do know that Hillary Clinton will destroy civil liberties and take us to war everywhere. So that's enough reason to not support her. And so what they did was they took their idyllic vision of Hillary Clinton and they turned it into real Hillary Clinton. And then they do a character assassination on the Alex Jones-like conspiracy character, as Entertainment Weekly points out. And saying, you know, holding the gun, aiming a pistol at a poster of her and saying, anyone who takes a stand for what they believe, people are going to say they're crazy. They've been calling me that for years and so forth. So that's their little character assassination coming after Alex Jones on Homeland, which, by the way, I've never watched. I hate that term so much, Homeland. The Fatherland. I mean, you want to talk about Nazis? Let's go Goodwin's Law here. The Patriot Act. The Homeland Department, okay? I mean, this is Nazi to the nth degree, folks, calling it Homeland, creating this massive bureaucracy, taking away our civil liberties, aborting the Constitution. Any program that calls itself Homeland is one that I will not be wasting my time watching. I don't want to watch that kind of predictive propaganda. Speaking of Homeland, let's talk about the homeless in L.A. They're now saying, yes, in fact, Jerry Brown was right. What's going on in California with these fires is actually man-made, or maybe woman-made. But we can't blame women for that. You know, if it's a bad thing that happens, they'll call it an act of God. They don't give God credit for good things that happen, only disasters. Those are acts of God. If it's something like L.A. being burned up by fires, that's going to be man-made. Or if it's global warming and climate change, that's going to be man-made. Well, it's homeless people who are cooking near the 405 freeway, officials are now saying, are the ones who caused the L.A. fire, cooking in an encampment near the 405 freeway. And this is the Skirball fire, which is now 85% contained after nearly a week after it started. It's destroyed six homes in the very wealthy neighborhood of Bel Air and damaged several others. So how's that for irony? You've got homeless people burning down the homes of the rich. That's happening in L.A. So it's not global warming, but it is their homeless policy that is burning down California, at least in that particular fire. But it's also the natural conditions. And as we talked about yesterday with Joseph Farah, who used to live in California. It's not an unusual thing. As big and as devastating as these fires are, it's the fifth largest fire that they've had in California over history. It is something that happens there all the time. It isn't something that is man-made. It isn't climate change. It is the usual climate for California, just as they were saying. I'm somebody who lived in Florida. They were saying, oh, this is climate change. We've got a hurricane in Florida. Well, no, it isn't. That's the natural climate of that area. That's the way that it happens. They're saying that taxes on meat can now join carbon and sugar to help limit emissions. This is the insanity of the climate change left. Now they want to extend control over your food, over your sugar, over your meat, over the fuel that you put in your car. Now they want to get onto the fuel that you put in your body. And it's all about control. It's all about making sure that they are the ones in charge. And they're talking about, this is Bloomberg, they're talking about a global levy. In other words, a global tax. Why do you need a global tax? Bing. You can't fund a global government without a global tax. You have to have a reason to create a global government. So they create global climate change. So they can say we have a global problem that can only be addressed globally, and we will have to have globally enforced taxes, which means that we will have to know everything about you on a global basis and control everything about you on a global basis. That's why it was so important for President Trump to shut down the Paris Climate Accord. And thank God he did. It was a great thing for him to shut that down. And they're still hitting him on it, saying, this is the only country in the world that has the good sense to get out of that. And we are the only ones in the world that have the good sense to get out of this. But yes, this is being backed by the usual suspects, Leonardo DiCaprio and Bill Gates, who fly around the world on their private jets, consume more than probably entire cities of you and I would ever consume in our entire life. And these guys are now going to hammer us on our hamburgers. They want our hamburgers to be taxed by some kind of a global government. They want our sugar to be taxed by a global government. They want our fuel to be taxed by a global government. And just take a look at what's going on in a small village. This is a microcosm of what's happening. Court in Florida upholds a ban of a vegetable garden in the front yard of a Miami Shores home. So when you want to actually do something to help the environment, when you want to actually do something that is really sustainable, they're going to hammer you. Like they said, you can park a boat or a jet ski in the driveway. You can even put statues, fountains, gnomes, pink flamingos, or Santa in a Speedo. But you cannot grow edible vegetables in your front yard. No, they're going to shut that down. And the lady who's there tells it like it is. She says, that's what government does. It interferes in people's lives. Since the village stepped its big foot in my garden, we used to have fresh meals every day. But since they put their big foot in it, they've now ruined our garden and my health. Yes, it takes a village. It takes a village. And that's what they call themselves, the village. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and yeah, we're going to talk about how one thing leads to another. Just a little desire to have a more beautiful and conforming neighborhood. And you give that power to the village, and we're going to tell you what happens with it. We're talking about this situation in a community called Miami Shores. They're talking about a village ordinance. Yes, it takes a village, doesn't it? To really mess up your life. Before we do that, I want to talk about the sales we have as part of our Christmas specials at InfoWars. We have a brand new product that we just introduced, CellForce. It works powerfully to fight the dangerous reactive oxygen species and toxins in your body, and it is now available at an introductory price of 50% off at $69.95. We also have discounts on many of our most popular products right now for Christmas: Brain Force, Silver Bullet, InfoWars Life Select Survival Food. And of course, yes, it is storable and it lasts for 25 years. It's non-GMO. It has great packaging that can be resealed once you break that long-term seal. You can reseal it and preserve it for a few more days after that. But that is also available right now on sale. And we have some 50% sales on many of our most popular items. Things like Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin, multi-mineral drink mix. It tastes great, but of course, you can make it taste any way you want to very easily because it's a drink format. You don't have to take a lot of pills to get multivitamins, multi-minerals. Also, we have Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 50% off. Super Male Vitality, Alpha Power, and Prostaguard, all 50% off as well. Take a look at the specials that we have right now for Christmas at InfoWarsStore.com, and we really do appreciate your support. All right, let's go back to the story in Miami. These are people who, because the community decided that they didn't want people to have home gardens, it's okay to grow grass, which doesn't do anything except keep you busy, but do not grow vegetables that you can eat. And they said you can put edible plants, but only in your backyard. And this was an ordinance, so these people were fighting them, taking it to Florida's 3rd District Court of Appeals, which upheld Miami Shore's ban on front yard garden vegetables. And the lady said, well, that's what government does. It interferes with people's lives, and they've ruined my garden. They've ruined my health. She says it's all about conformity. Miami Shores wants to be a mini Coral Gables, which, if you don't know, it's an upscale. They point out in the article, an upscale South Florida city known for strict zoning regulations that at one time even included a ban on pickup trucks in the driveways at night. she said, what is the definition of edible? I can go into any front yard and I can find something that's edible there because every plant has an edible part. She called the village short-sighted for encouraging the cultivation of grass, which she said is useless. She said, by killing gardens, we are also killing bees and butterflies, who are the pollinators of our food supply. So she's real upset about this. This is real sustainable environmentalism, doing something for her health. But, of course, the government won't allow that. The government won't allow you to even deduct the money for your health care before you send it to them in taxes. That's how much they care, truly care, for your health care. And if you think anything's going to get better, Alabama, one of the reddest of states, just sent Doug Jones to the Senate. And as he was running, he said, we've got to quit playing political football with our health care. We can only do that if we work together to find common ground. That's right. We have to fix Obamacare. We can never replace it. This is something that is just it's so venerable now that it was given to us back in, what, 2013? This thing that is now 4 years old can never be touched. It has now become a foundation, a permanent foundation of our society, according to Democrats like Doug Jones. He said it was always meant to be a work in progress. No, it was meant to be a transition to complete government control of your health care. They have always wanted that. That's what Hillary Clinton wanted to do, and she tried to get it all at once, and now they realize that incrementalism is the name of the game. We're going to have common health care, just like we're going to have common core education. What is the common link in all this? It's communism, sold to us by community organizers and people like Doug Jones. And when the election was going, Roy Moore pointed out, Doug Jones has made it clear he'll continue to fight President Trump in his effort to repeal Obamacare, and you can count on it. And so when we look at things like this, the overreaching government control for our own good, right? In the same way that we look at the overreaching zoning laws everywhere. That's a good example of government at work, isn't it? You know, back in North Carolina, I got to say, North Carolina was far, far easier on the eye than Texas is. They had very restrictive signing regulations there. When I had a business there, we learned, however, though, that the big corporations somehow got around those signing rules. The rest of us didn't. One of our big competitors came in, and they violated every single rule in the book. And, I won't get into who it was. It's a corporation that was traded on the New York Stock Exchange competing with the mom-and-pop businesses there. And we didn't have a chance. And some of the politicians feigned the fact that they were upset about this situation. Said, how in the world could this happen? Well, there's nothing we can do about it. Somebody in the planning department signed off on it erroneously, and now we just can't undo that. So you let the people in the planning department violate your laws, and you say there's nothing you can do about it, you're just going to let it stand? Yeah, that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. So that's the way these regulations work. You know, they it looks really nice, but there's a creepy Stepford Wife vibe hidden underneath all of that. And a very authoritarian crony capitalism vibe as well. And as we move to socialist health care and complete control of our lives, because that's what it's going to amount to, you just have to understand that there is never going to be any choice about anything left to you. And they're not going to deliver the goods either. And we talk about crony capitalism, which has given capitalism a bad name with millennials and other people. Understand that there is no such thing as socialism without cronyism. When you have socialism, like in Venezuela, you wind up with a system where the kleptocrat in charge winds up nationalizing all of the industries, as they did down there. And then as they're starting to leave office, as they get pushed out or whatever, they transfer it to their buddies or to their offshore bank accounts. See, socialism is cronyism. That's all it is. It's all it is. And it just turns, the question is, how big is the circle of friends? Is it going to be one guy, the Uber dictator, or is he going to cut some other people in it? You know, Ron Paul had an interesting editorial on Zero Hedge about this gay marriage wedding cake case that's being argued before the Supreme Court. And it's one aspect of this that I didn't talk enough about. You know, we talked about whether or not this is speech, whether or not you can compel somebody to do something that they don't want to do because they have an open business. And there is a completely another aspect of this that really needs to be said in terms of forcing somebody to bake a cake. You know, we, as he points out in this editorial, he said, some people claim that forcing the bakery to bake a cake is consistent with libertarianism. The Libertarian Party's candidate, Gary Johnson, claimed that and absurdly claimed that this baker was like an electricity company, which, by the way, is a monopoly. The baker was not a monopoly. So there's a problem right there with Gary Johnson's analogy. But then also taking it to some weird analogy, saying, yeah, the electricity company could say we're not going to give service to a Muslim. That's also an absurdity. But we're going to talk about what the real issue is here. Words of wisdom from Ron Paul when we come back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight.
Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I was just talking about Ron Paul, and he had some words of wisdom. I think his point of view needs to be heard. It's not an angle that I spent time talking on when I talked about the wedding cake controversy that is now before the Supreme Court. And it should be, you should think about what Ron Paul had to say. He's saying, is this a libertarian thing to say that we're going to force this baker to bake a cake that he does not want to do? He said, no one would support a private individual forcing a bakery employee to bake a cake at gunpoint, So why is it okay for the government to do it? Because that's what we're really talking about here. The government is saying, at gunpoint, bake the cake or we'll take away your business. And then, of course, if you were to bake the cake and the individual were to pay you, the government would still be pointing the gun at him and saying, give me a big chunk of that money that he just gave you as well. It's the gun. It's the gun in your face. That's the government. It's the gun in your face. And so is that consistent with libertarianism? To say, we're going to hold a gun to your head and force you to bake this cake for somebody. You don't want to do it, but we're going to make you do it. Now, that's slavery. It's not liberty. It's slavery when you embrace a system like that. Gary Johnson and others in the Libertarian Party who don't seem to even understand what basic libertarian principles are about. Ron Paul does. And he points out, he said, even if it were true that this guy is bigoted towards homosexuals, he said, that still wouldn't justify government intervention, would it? There are different ways to handle bigotry than government intervention. He said, bigots and others with distasteful views have the right to use their property as they choose. And if they don't, you will not have any property rights. See, it's the same thing that we see now with speech, isn't it? They get in your face and they demand that you be censored. Social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, Google, others will censor you if they don't like your speech. They will not tolerate something they don't like. Instead of getting in the free marketplace of ideas and arguing with people or even having a boycott of somebody. They will just censor you. And that's what we're talking about here. He said the way to combat bigotry is through boycotts or with peaceful persuasion. Ah, that's the thing, right? Instead of a gun in the face, how about persuading people? I've said before that growing up in the South, when there was a civil rights revolution there, what I saw was a backlash against government mandates against discrimination. The more the government would apply laws, the more you would see people who really had never seen any racism in them before. They would get very defiant about that and say, well, I'm not going to do that because the government tells me I have property rights and so forth. You know, the thing that changed it, and I'll have to give credit to Hollywood. It's the only time I've seen Hollywood do something positive in my life. And that was the movies that they would do. The movies that they would do that would show, hey, black people are human beings just like you are. And that was the thing that really changed people's mind. I think that did more. And I think it was the only thing that was effective. And that was persuasion. It was persuasion by showing, hey, this person is a human being just like you are. So they've got a different color skin. So they've got a different color hair, whatever. They're still a person. Or movies that would put the bigotry out there and hold it. Like, can't think of the one. Atticus Finch. What is it? Kill a Mockingbird. Kill a Mockingbird, which now the left doesn't like that because it was a white savior. Can't have that. They were speaking to white people about bigotry. That was really the point of To Kill a Mockingbird. They were showing white people on both sides of it, but one guy doing the right thing. And that was the point of it, and I think that it changed a lot of minds. But I don't think, I think what the government prohibitions did and the government mandates and the government intrusions on private property and the dictates that they came up with, I think that hardened people's hearts. It didn't persuade people. It hardened their hearts. It was Kill a Mockingbird, one of my favorite films. I can't believe I couldn't remember the name there for a second. But this is what Ron Paul says. If the Supreme Court is considering whether or not this is simply a case of religious liberty, that is a dangerous thing as well. And here's why. And this is the key thing that I wanted to get to. Because, you know, it's about persuasion. It is not about using coercion and government force. But here's the deal. He says, if you make this turn strictly on religious liberty, then that means that a victory for the bakery would imply that it's legitimate for laws to dictate whom private businesses must provide services as long as an exemption is made for religious differences. And then what is the problem with that? Well, now the government gets to decide whether or not your religious beliefs are legitimate or not. Oh, now we're in a whole new problem here, right? And I think that's a very important point that Ron Paul made. If we're going to have this turn on religious freedom, and if we're going to have a turn on even freedom of speech, that means that the government is going to be the arbiter of what is genuine religion and whether or not you can express it. And so they're still going to be violating the First Amendment. And it's going to let them determine whether or not your religious convictions should be supported or whether or not they're legitimate or whatever. And he says this. He says, individuals have the right to form any arrangement they wish as long as they do not engage in force or fraud. And that gets us back to the original founding principles of the Libertarian Party, which they've now rejected formally in their statement of principles. They've rejected their statement of principles, and they've rejected libertarianism in principle. That's why I cannot support them anymore, even though I gave them enough money over time that I became a life member. I don't support what it's become. You know, every institution can go off the rails and has to be constantly reformed, and that's true especially of political institutions. It's true of religious institutions. It's true of individuals. We have to always be checking ourselves against one standard or the other. What is the standard? Well, the standard in America should be the Constitution and individual liberty. And if somebody gets off the standard, get off the rail with that, then that's at the point where we say no more. No more. Now, here's an example of the GOP problem that we have. We've got Senators Grassley and Cornyn here from Texas, telling Trump to reconsider and to remove some judicial picks that he put in. Why is this? Well, we've got one guy who had the audacity to talk about transgenderism being pushed to kids in kindergarten as being a plan of Satan. He said that at one point in time. We can't have a judge like that. We can't have somebody with Christian beliefs. We can't have somebody that thinks that we ought to not push transgenderism on kids who aren't of the age of consent and can't make decisions like this in kindergarten. I'm telling you, this is the central issue about pedophilia. We got a clip here of Corey Feldman saying, yeah, you know, I told you about that stuff, and the police department said, no, you didn't. He says, yeah, you took a deposition. No, you didn't. We don't have that. And he goes, I've got the tape here. Oh, we just found the tape. And so we got a little clip we're going to play for you in a moment here. But before we leave this, I just want to say that we have gotten to the position now where conservative Republicans like Grassley and John Cornyn are telling us that Christians need not apply, especially Christians who are going to stand in the gap and say, you are not going to gaslight children who don't even understand what sexuality means. These are kids in kindergarten who are being pushed a transgender agenda. And we're not going to allow that. Because if you do that and you say that kids who are not capable of making that decision can determine whether or not they're male or female, that's now the new politically correct trend that is being pushed by Grassley and by Cornyn. They are pushing that kind of perverted political correctness and opposing a Christian judge who says this is part of Satan's plan. That is disqualifying, they say. John Cornyn is taking issue with the fact that this judge did not disclose these speeches where he made these eyebrow-raising remarks. That's according to CNN, eyebrow-raising remarks. You know what I find eyebrow-raising? I find government schools who are pushing transgenderism to kindergartners, that's what I find eyebrow-raising. And don't think we don't understand where this is going. If you can claim that they can make those kinds of decisions about their gender, then, of course, they can consent to sex with these perverted politicians who are running our country. People like Dennis Hastert, the longest-serving Republican Speaker of the House. And now we've got these faux Republicans pushing this and pushing judges out who would oppose it. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to continue along the lines of where we left off here as we look at quote-unquote conservative GOP senators like Chuck Grassley and John Cornyn saying, how dare you, President Trump, send us a Christian judge who had a problem with transgenderism being sold to kids? That's right. You better not talk about that. Don't even send us anybody like that. Well, we're going to break down these pedophile rings and how they are in Washington. We've got some information from Corey Feldman as well as from others. Greg Busseroni, I think is how you pronounce his name, a survivor of sex trafficking in the 1970s and early 80s. His account is backed up by WikiLeaks as well as documents from the FBI about mafia activity and highly placed politicians and celebrities and sports figures that were involved in this sort of thing. And this is where the transgender gaslighting of kindergartners is leading us. And that's why these people won't shut this down. That's why they won't put in a reverse the statute of limitations against pedophilia. They don't want to stop this. Dennis Hastert. Just think about Dennis Hastert. All right, let's talk real quickly about what's going on at InfoWarsStore.com before I get back to that. We have a new product, CellForce. It is now at an introductory offer of 50% off, and it is a way to powerfully fight dangerous reactive oxygen species and toxins in your body. Experience a revolutionary formula and overhaul your body's cellular engines with CellForce from InfoWars Life. We also have a wide variety of our most popular products that have been around for a while on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Things like BrainForce, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver formula, and InfoWars Life Select Survival Food. That's our storable food, shelf life for 25 years. It's all made in the U.S. It is non-GMO. It is resealable even after you open it for a short period of time. You can preserve it that way. Great packaging. Great, clean, made-in-America products, and it's on sale right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And we also have some of our most popular items on sale at 50% off. Knockout, are all-natural sleep aid, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, Prostaguard, and Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin formula that you can take as a drink. You don't have to swallow a lot of pills. All of those, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, so let's talk about this story. It's from the Free Thought Project. It came out last week. I've had this on my desk to get to because of politics and other things. I didn't get to it. But, you know, when we look at the politics of the GOP, shutting down a judge who would have the audacity to criticize the transgender agenda against our kindergartners, I think it's time we talk about the pedophile sex ring here. As I point out, we see this in Hollywood, but you know, where you're really going to find this, of course, is going to be in Washington, D.C., because it's all about dominating people. It is all about power. That's why the politicians are so addicted to the pedophile power that they get. Now, this is a guy, Greg Busaroni, a survivor of sex trafficking, part of an alleged child sex ring that was operating in the late 1970s, early 1980s, primarily targeted troubled young boys on the East Coast. The network was said to be comprised of known human traffickers. He is no stranger to exposing elite pedophiles. He came forward in 2012 with major allegations linking Jerry Sandusky to exactly this sort of thing. Remember, Jerry Sandusky hung out with these organizations that were going to help children. They were all about helping the children, you know, just like the government schools that teach the transgender agenda to the kindergartners. Jerry Sandusky was there to help the children. It was a massive pedophile ring that was tied to former Poly Prep football coach Phil Foglietta. And they point out that these allegations have been corroborated by media reports, emails that have been leaked by WikiLeaks, as well as FBI documentation of mafia activity, testimony from a congressional committee hearing that was obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request. And, of course, he had also linked former Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, Lawrence King, and former DNC Chair Ed Rendell to the scandal. It's bipartisan. It's the Uni Party. The Uni Party, the DNC Chair, and the GOP Speaker of the House involved in pedophile rings. He told the media that Lawrence King would host trips to take kids from South Philly Boys Club to Washington, D.C., and pointed out that Hastert was apparently very close to Lawrence King as well. Aside from the FOIA requests, WikiLeaks and mainstream press backing up the claims of him, he said, "We're now seeing the curtain get peeled back. We're seeing how taxpayer dollars are being spent to cover up the rampant sex abuse that is taking place in the nation's capital." And, of course, it's not going to be just covering up what they do to women. It's going to be covering up what they do to children. Is it that hard for you to believe that the politicians are covering up their pedophile rings when you see that they spent $17 million to cover up the sexual abuse of congressmen and that people like Nancy Pelosi are complicit in that? People like Bernie Sanders are complicit in that? I call on them to resign. Far worse than anything that has been alleged that President Trump did. Also, pornography mogul Richard Bassiano was reported to have partnered with a mafia notable who the New York Times lists as a captain in the Gambino crime family. And it goes on and on. They talk about the Obama administration with the help of the DNC Rendell, who was at the time governor of Pennsylvania, you know, where Jerry Sandusky was, University of Pennsylvania. They couldn't touch him because he was so important to them, just like Harvey Weinstein. But that they also removed children from Haiti illegally. We've talked about that as well, the trafficking of children. And this was also involving the Clinton Foundation, where they took children away from the Haitian island after the earthquake. They took 12 minors who were not involved in any adoption process. It's like, wait a minute, why are you putting them on a plane and moving them out of the country? Oh, yeah, why would they be doing that? No clue, no clue at all. And then we go to Corey Feldman, who's been talking about this in Hollywood for a while, but I think it's really Washington we're going to see this. And remember that we just had our Republicans say, this guy's disqualified from being on the judiciary because he talked about the evil of pushing a transgender stuff on children. So here's Corey Feldman, who everybody was saying, no, didn't happen. The police were saying, didn't happen. And he said, I've got the tape. Oh, we just found our tape now as well. Police in California say they've uncovered a tape in which Corey Feldman lists the names of men that he said had abused him in the past. He had claimed back in October that he had given the names of these sexual predators in Hollywood to the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office back in 1993. But the Sheriff's Office had previously denied the claim, saying, we don't have any of that stuff. Okay. Now they say, oh, you know what? We found it. Yeah, it was in that file there that we had with your name on it. But we weren't going to tell anybody about it unless you had a copy of it and were willing to play it. So he goes on to Dr. Oz's show, and this is what Corey Feldman had to play. I actually played a little bit of the clip of the tape that he had. Here's Corey Feldman.
That's his name. Now, it is John Grissom, who is one of your abusers. Take a listen.
But the information that we got was that John, is it Grissom, who was your assistant, and that when Michael started paying a lot of attention to you and you started spending time with Michael, that he got angry and jealous, basically, because you were hanging out with Michael and not with him. Do I hit a sore spot?
First of all, I knew Michael long before I knew John Grissom. And John Grissom was the guy who molested me. So, I don't know where you got the facts from, but, I mean, they're kind of messed up. But John Grissom, you know, was the guy who molested me. And I'm sure he probably was jealous of how much I respected Michael and how much I hung around Michael. And if, in fact, he may have thought anything was going on with Michael, I could imagine how a sick person like that would think that, you know.
How old were you when that happened?
15.
We're not asking you to tell us about that.
Right. All right, so let's hold it there. Do you think that Corey Feldman has a right to be believed? Do you think Corey Feldman has a right to be heard? Do you think the press is at all interested in this? I mean, look at the attention that was applied to this race in Alabama. It's all you heard about in the media. Here he is. He's 15 years old, claiming that he was sexually abused. Not only did they cover this up and pretend that they had lost this, because remember, that was 24 years ago, 1993. Disappeared for 24 years. He has taken all kinds of criticism and abuse for talking about that. The mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. The police didn't want to talk about it. They buried it. Isn't it interesting that they would focus so much, they'd be so outraged about this, claiming that Roy Moore had done this? Do you think that they really are interested in getting to the bottom of this? I don't. I think it was a political hit piece. And I think that the real issues and the real pedophiles in Washington, including conservative Republicans, will continue to operate.
Waging war on corruption, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to get to the confessions of a former Facebook executive, as well as something that is interesting about what's going on with Down syndrome's families. They now have an abortion ban that has been put into a couple of states saying that if you've got a baby with Down syndrome, you cannot abort that child. And so now that has sparked a debate on NPR. Because NPR is going to seize on that and say, no, you should be able to abort that child. We'll talk about that after we come back. But let's talk about something a little bit light here at the top of the hour, because we've been dealing with some pretty heavy subjects here. They have found ticks trapped in amber, were likely sucking dinosaur blood. I mean, we're going right back to Jurassic Park now, except it's ticks instead of mosquitoes. You know, when we look at this, again, every time we talk about Jurassic Park, every time we talk about CRISPR and these other issues, remember that Michael Crichton's purpose in writing that novel was really to explain to people the danger of out-of-control genetic manipulation, saying we have these fantastic tools that are going to be coming online very quickly. The people at the time, we looked at it, oh, yeah, it's science fiction, just like the Terminator robots, autonomous killing machines, self-aware, AI, all of that was science fiction when it was done in Terminator. And yet, science is catching up very quickly to all these issues, but our ethical legal considerations about these things are not anywhere to be found. And I think that really is the metaphor for our society here in the 21st century. We have slipped the chains of any kind of ethical or legal considerations because there is no ethics here, right? Whose standards are you going to go by? We don't pay attention to the Constitution. We don't have any religious belief that anchors our society with a foundation anymore. So anything goes. Anything goes. If you can do it, do it. And that's what Michael Crichton was pushing back against. He's saying just because you have the ability to do it, remember that from the movie? The character, the Jeff Goldblum character saying, well, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. And now we have DARPA, as I mentioned the other day, looking at genetic bioweapons, genetically engineering bioweapons. This is something that The Guardian and many others have looked at. We've had Vladimir Putin saying, this is very alarming. We've got the U.S. military trying to get samples of Russian people, but excluding Ukrainian people. And they say, well, you know, we're just trying to get some baseline stuff here. Nothing to be worried about. No threats going on here. It's like, well, why don't you just do it with people in America? And when they do this and they target a specific small group of people, understand that they can point that weapon at anybody. Or if you flip it around the other way, they can kill everyone except a small group of people, maybe like them. So maybe some of these people are interrelated to each other. Or whatever, or they put their genetics in there and they wipe out everybody but them. And that's where these guys want to go. I mean, that's the thing when I look at these types of Jurassic Park stuff here and understand that this is actually, all they need to do is be able to find the ticks with the blood, and they've got CRISPR and the other tools where they could start doing this exact kind of genetic manipulation that Michael Crichton warned us about. But before they start to actually grow the individuals, it's far easier to destroy something than it is to create something. So it's going to be far easier for them to do a massive kill-off of select groups of humans than it is going to be for them to reconstruct a dinosaur from some blood DNA samples that they had there. It'll be far easier to destroy than to create. That's the thing to be worried about. Meanwhile, we got Alec Baldwin now looking to revive his dinosaur career, hoping that he can go on Broadway. It was originally reported as a one-man show, and when I saw that, I thought, yeah, the one man might be him, not even the audience. But, you know, if he could make it anywhere, he could make it there on Broadway. New York, it's up to you. So we'll see if Alec Baldwin can save his career from extinction. Stay with us. Be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You know, I said at the beginning of the broadcast, if you want to look at who the real winner was in the election last night in Alabama, look no farther than the Washington Post. Yes, Jeff Bezos' own personal political blog led the attack. They created the news that took down Roy Moore and was repeatedly echoed by everybody else in the media, taking one serious charge that could not be proven. It was going to be a he said, she said charge, and then conflating that with a lot of non-crimes, and then adding more people. And then you got people like Frank Luntz saying, oh, how many women is that now? How many real charges are there, Frank? How many charges are there where the people didn't have a personal vendetta with Roy Moore, or where they weren't diehard Democrats, or where they weren't forging their yearbook? But never mind. It was the Washington Post that got this through. And there's an interesting article from NTK Network pointing out that Jeff Bezos is not just using his own personal political blog, the Washington Post, to attack politicians. He's also using it to attack his competitors' products. Of course he is. And he got this thing for pocket change. I mean, why would he not spend a measly $250 million? That is nothing for Jeff Bezos. You look at some of the jumps in his wealth based on stock price jumps. And, you know, it's like working for like you and I working for a half hour to buy the Washington Post. And it gives them a great deal of leverage in Washington, but it gives them leverage even over places like Apple Computer, where he has used it to attack Apple Computer. But he's been absolutely silent, the Washington Post has, about all these reports about Amazon employees and the difficult working conditions that they're put through under the holidays. No reports about Ebenezer Bezos. Not at all. None of this stuff about the working these people to their falling asleep, standing up, or having the drivers be required to deliver over 200 parcels a day to the extent they don't even have time to do a bathroom break and they're urinating into a bottle so they can keep going. Nothing about that on the Washington Post. No, they won't talk about that. They were focused on shutting down the revolution against the GOP establishment and the Washington establishment. And then we look at what's going on in social media. We've now had President Trump winning a defamation court case over his Twitter account. This also has echoes of Me Too-ism in it as well. A New York appeals court has ruled that you cannot collect damages for defamation if President Trump insults you over Twitter. This is what a Republican strategist, Cheryl Jacobus, or Jacobus, was trying to do. She had sued President Trump for $4 million. Why? Because he said that she was a real dummy, a major loser, and claimed that she, quote, begged him for a job in his campaign. Sounds like what he said about Kirsten Gillibrand, doesn't it? She said that the president sent a virtual mob to attack her on Twitter after she went on national TV and questioned whether or not he was fit for office. So she can question him whether or not he's fit for office. But if he responds back and says, you're a loser, you begged me for a job, you're a real dummy, and then if people pick that up and say, yeah, he's right, we like President Trump, we don't like the never Trumpers in the Republican Party, then she sues him. And her lawyer said, this was not a happy day for democracy. Well, it was not a happy day for the Democrat Party. It was not a happy day for the uni party that wants to censor anybody and believes that they can criticize Trump and he should just shut up and be silent about that. But here's the deal. They defended President Trump's intemperate tweets, as they put it. But they said they're protected by the First Amendment, despite chastising them as being intended to belittle and demean. And of course, it wasn't intended for the Republican strategist who said he was unfit for office. That was not belittling the president or demeaning the president. I mean, you know, it's an argument back and forth. You have free speech. The president has a bully pulpit, and it's been magnified by Twitter. And whether or not you like what he has to say or not, he has the freedom to do that. The president does. But you will be taken off of Twitter if you exercise your free speech. So it's not really a win for you and I. It is a win for somebody who is high profile. It's going to be a while before Twitter gets authoritarian enough that they start bumping the president off. They did it for a short period of time. One employee wanted to do it and went ahead and did that. So he was off for about 15 minutes or something before they put that in. But that's free speech. Free speech for the well-known, the politically powerful, I should say, because they've taken a lot of well-known people like Roger Stone off for saying nothing. Even removed his news site that didn't get involved in any personal disputes with anybody. They removed that as well. And we've seen many people censored on and demonetized on YouTube. Let's talk about Facebook. And this is not even about the political censorship. This is about what it does to us as people and what it does to our society. And this is an individual who was, and his last name I cannot pronounce. He's an Indian, I believe, speaking to a group of students at Stanford Graduate School. This guy's name is Chamath Palihapitiya. He used to work at Facebook. He's one of the people who joined Facebook in 2007. He became vice president for user growth. And he says he now feels tremendous guilt for his role there. He says he's now calling on people to take a hard break, he calls it, from a service that he believes is ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. He says, if you feed the beast will destroy you. We created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That's truly where we are, he said. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to realize and to really internalize how important this is. Let's play a clip that we have of him saying this to the students at Stanford.
You said that this is a time for soul searching in social media businesses, and you were part of building the largest one. What soul searching are you doing right now on that?
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences, I think in the back, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you as the future leaders of the world to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we're in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years. It's created huge tension with my friends, huge tensions in my social circles. If you look at, like, you know, my Facebook feed, I've posted maybe 2 times in 7 years.
Okay, let's hold it right there. Because I think one of the things that he said earlier was, he talked about the short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops. They understand, at least in hindsight, if this wasn't by design, and we understand that the CIA and Inkatel was involved in the establishment of many of these institutions now, these social media institutions, I think they did understand what was going on with it. We have to understand the internet was designed by a psychiatrist at DARPA. And when he talks about ripping apart our society, yeah, it's ripping apart the DNA of our society. But remember where we started with this. We started talking about how DARPA is working on ripping apart our actual DNA. Genetic bioweapons. This is where they're really headed, folks. Are we going to have that discussion? We can't even talk about Facebook in a rational way. Are we going to be able to stop DARPA? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be talking to Lionel. So stick around. It's always entertaining when we have Lionel on. I want to tell you about the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, and then I'm going to talk about Democrat collusion as well as Down syndrome families divided over an abortion ban. That's a very deep issue. But we got Andrew McCartney saying the real collusion was the Obama Justice Department with the Clinton campaign. I've been saying that for a long time. The real story here, the real scandal, is the politicization of the Department of Justice, of law enforcement, of the surveillance state here. Don't be worried about the Russians as much as you should be worried about these people right here who are doing dragnet surveillance of the American public, who are looking at people who are not bad people, as we've been told by Michael Hayden. They're not interested in bad people. They're interested in interesting people. And now, as William Binney called them, the Praetorian Guards are now the kingmakers. They will take people up, they will take them down, and they will protect the deep state at all costs. And there is nobody looking into them, investigating them. That's the real story. And we've got a clip of Andrew McCarthy saying that now as well, saying that's where the real collusion is, and that's what we really need to be concerned about, the real collusion, the real corruption. And another level of corruption other than the old style corruption of the Clinton Foundation going in and just grabbing as much money and power as they can, and selling favors to foreign governments as well as people inside the United States. No, it's gone far beyond that. It's creating this massive surveillance state and using it for their own purposes. Before we get back to the news, I just want to remind you of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com for Christmas. We have a new product, CellForce, introductory offer of 50% off, and you'll find that at InfoWarsStore.com. It fights dangerous reactive oxygen species and toxins in your body. So take a look at the information about that. It's a brand new product. First time I've seen it today. Introductory offer of 50% off. We also have a lot of our most popular products now 50% off. Things like Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 50% off. Supermale Vitality, 50% off. And another new product that we introduced last week, Alpha Power. That is 50% off of as an introductory special. And Prostaguard, 50% off. So take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got a lot of products, 50% off, and many others like BrainForce, Silver Bullet, InfoWars Life, Select Survival Food are back on sale as well. Real quickly, I want to talk about this situation with Down syndrome families. They say that Ohio could soon become the latest state to restrict abortions based on Down syndrome diagnosis. A bill would make it a felony for doctors to perform abortions after a Down syndrome diagnosis is now moving through the state legislature in Ohio and could be ready for signature by Governor John Kasich as soon as this week. And some of the individuals are saying here, one lady who has a child, a two-year-old son, who was born with Down syndrome, says she was shocked when she had a prenatal test that showed that he had Down syndrome, but she said he's still a baby. He's still worthy of a life just like everybody else. Now, are they going to continue to tell us that this is not the taking of a human life? This is clearly what's happening. You know, my wife and I, when we had our first child, we were quite a bit older, and the doctors were insisting that we have a test for Down syndrome. And we told them, well, you know what? We're not going to abort the baby, so why do that? The test itself can have some negative consequences. So it really doesn't matter. And you know, what are you going to do if you have a child and then the child comes down with autism? I mean, it is a difficult thing to raise a child with Down syndrome. We had a very close friend of ours in North Carolina who did that. She's gone now. But anyway, it's a very difficult thing. Very difficult thing. And but they would never have it any other way. Sometimes we have difficult things we have to struggle with. And if you have a child with autism, that is also can be a demoralizing, difficult thing that takes all of your time as well. Are you going to kill your child with autism because they come down with autism? Does the government care enough that it would even investigate the causes of autism? No. We have many people who have done the research and say they believe that there is a link between vaccines and autism, but the government will not conduct that research, and the government will not do the studies, and the government protects the vaccine companies there. So is it really fundamentally different if you have a child with Down syndrome or a child with autism? It really has the same debilitating effect on your family. It really does. But it's still a human being, still a life. And it's still a joy for many of these people who have kids with Down syndrome. You look at the other issues with vaccines, causing continuous seizures in children. That is also a debilitating situation. Will they help with that? I mean, finally, we had a Christian legislator here who had some compassion on these families, and he got an exception here in Texas, of all places, for medical marijuana, but only for that one condition. That is caused, in many cases, by vaccines being introduced at a very young age and a very high intensity. A lot of vaccines all at once at a very young age when the immune systems can't deal with it. We don't know what causes the genetic mutation that causes Down syndrome. It seems to be associated with age and things that are happening to our bodies that cause those types of mutations. But there is a lot of, and that may not be something we can do anything about. But can't we even do some research about autism? Instead, they just say, well, we're just going to accept it, even though it destroys these different families. We're just going to accept it. It is still a life. It is still a child. And they can be very loving children. But it is a difficult thing, just like a family with a child with autism. We have only a minute 47 left, but let's play a little bit about this clip from Andrew McCarthy, talking about what the real story here is. The real story is the collusion between the DOJ and the HRC. Here's Andrew McCarthy.
But I think your general point about Mueller's poor judgment in larding this ridiculously inflated 17-lawyer team with Democratic donors and activists is not only a big problem for the integrity of the investigation. I think we're ultimately going to find that the real collusion story of the 2016 election was the way that the Obama administration put the law enforcement and intelligence arms of the administration in the service of the Clinton campaign. And a lot of these Mueller lawyers come from the top levels of the Obama Justice Department.
Yeah, running divisions or previously representing Ben Rhodes when he was testifying or being interviewed by the House Intel Committee, representing the Clinton
Foundation.
Let's
hold it right there. You know what? It's turned out, it is like this time of year we look at Christmas Carol and so on. This is like a Dickens novel, isn't it? What we're seeing happening in Washington. All these people in law enforcement and the intelligence agencies, it's like they, and the judges and the FISA judges recusing themselves, it's like they all know each other. It's like this little Dickens novel, where everybody in the town is interconnected in weird ways with each other. That's the real story. That's the real collusion that we need to be concerned about. That is a much greater threat to us than anything a foreign enemy could do. It's the enemies domestic, the enemies who control our government, control our law enforcement, and control the massive levers of the surveillance state. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Lionel.
Information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Lionel to wage war on the information, disinformation pushers. You can find Lionel on YouTube at Lionel Nation, also Twitter at Lionel Media, and his website is lionelmedia.com. Thank you for joining us, Lionel. What about this election that has been watched around the world in Alabama?
I want to check that Studio B system, see live stream 7, the video hub 40 by 40. Can we go over that, please, before we go into this? I like being technical. You know, by the way, great show. Never miss it every morning. I'm not saying that just because
Thank you.
David, this may come as a big shock to you, but this was not about Roy Moore. Nobody cared about Roy Moore. I'm sorry, but Roy Moore, you know, Captain Hootenanny, I'm sorry. I hope I'm not bothering anybody. But the horse, we had some trouble on that horse. You know what I mean? Look, it wasn't about that. This is not about Trump. The most interesting thing to do is think about this as a Rorschach test. Just step back for a second. Just watch what happens. To Mr. Jones, bless your heart, you've got 2 years. Does the name Scott Brown come to mind? Remember him? Remember him? This was a fellow who came along, and he was that surprise. And, oh, out of nowhere, Massachusetts, wow, this Republican. And then, gone with a pickup truck. So you've got 2 years, and you better do something because you're going to have to run again. So while this may be this moment of, you know, exaltation and we won, remember how that goes. And by the by, when it comes to those individuals suggesting that Roy Moore shouldn't be in a position to want to recount or count his votes, remember Al Franken, how long he held people hostage for that one? Remember that one went on and on and on. It's like, come on, Al, please. And lo and behold, he won. But here's what this is about. Is it about Bannon? Bannon is going to sit there and say, because he's brilliant, and I'm looking at this from strategy, not necessarily the fact that I necessarily endorse any of these particular opinions, but that's not the point. Bannon is going to say, now you need me more than ever. Did you think for a moment the deep state will let this happen? Do you know what happened? Did you see those people who came out? And then they're going to look at the numbers, and that's as good as it got. It was no blowout. That's what happened. Look what they did. They need us more than ever. Trump, by the way, they're going to make it as this is a referendum against a Trump mandate. This is the end of Trump. Watch what they say. And David, I got to tell you something. I never thought in my life we would go from absolute no discussion about anything sexual or untoward or rude to this Victorian, and I'm sorry, but in 1993, at a mall in Bartow, Florida, David Knight was asked, what? I mean, wait.
He asked an 18-year-old that's working at the mall for a date. How dare him? I mean, we've gone, like I said to my wife, I said, we've gone from the sexual revolution to sexual revulsion. And right. It's been given to us by the same people that gave us the sexual revolution.
Not only are we reframing gender into these ridiculous LGBTPPQ ragbop, remember that RAGG? I'm dating myself again. So that's
you and I are on the same page. Whenever we go to that article that came out with all the initials, right. I pull that up and played it for my kids who had never heard ragmop.
I know.
So this is where we are right now.
We always do this. We always like console each other, like, yes, I remember that.
You and I remember that, even if the audience doesn't. So.
We make jokes, and right now the control room is saying, what are they talking about? Is this that old fart stuff? Is this this 60s stuff? We don't understand this. What are they? Is this code? These codgers, these boots, these wizened folks? But the bottom line is simply this. This goes to show you that, David, I have never enjoyed politics or being a part of this more in my life than now. The bad part is Bezos and Washington Post, they're going to take credit for it. This vindicates because she's demented like this. Gloria Allred, see, we got it right. The yearbook, we're authenticating yearbooks. Okay, fine, Gloria, you got one.
Gloria's going to be signing yearbooks all over the country.
Right.
Now. She's going to go on a tour. Bring me your yearbook, I'll sign it, whatever you want me to put in there.
Remember the a blind dog finds a nut every now and then or whatever. So that's great. But ultimately, and this is going to be a real look at how politics is going to be phrased. And I want people to step back for a moment and just say for a moment, this is not Roy Moore, bless his heart, as we say in the South, bless his heart, was not the best exemplar of a 2017 even by Alabama terms. And by the way, have you noticed, David, this it's not racist per se, but it's maybe statist, but not that statist. This looking down at Alabama, the way they say, well, in Dothan, oh, let's look at Jefferson County.
Oh, yeah, look at Michael Moore. Even when the people in Alabama gave Michael Moore exactly what he wanted, he's still out there like, F you, white people, F you. We got an article up on Infowars.com where he puts out a tweet, just keeps repeating that over and over again. It's like,
but
what do you want?
This has become, the political discourse has become nothing more than a drunk man yelling at a comedy club, a heckler. That's what we are. Look at this. Look at this. This man was on Broadway. He was on Broadway. This is the best that they can do. Now, so where do we fit in? What happens? Trump should be sitting back and says, it doesn't matter. As long as there's chaos. And this is just me personally. I want there to be a complete and total destruction of deep state, left and right. Two sides of the same coin. The myth of the left-right paradigm. I want everybody to just say, what was that all about? Because Trump is going to sit back and say, I'm not with the Republicans and I'm not with the Democrats. I'm with a group of people called Americans and people who believe in this republic. And I know it sounds corny. And I know it sounds like we're going to break into the, here's one for you, the Johnny Mansingers. Go for it. Now, you remember Get Up and Dance or Get Up and Live. Did they ever come to your high school? Remember this stuff? The 60s.
Now you lost me on that reference.
Okay, forget it. Okay,
even I don't know that reference. Okay.
Well, it's the 1860s. I got my 60s. But let's not take this too far out of context. Now, the bottom line is simply this. You mentioned this, the mainstream media. I cannot say this again. The people who are trying their best to hold together mainstream media news, and let's don't forget the news part, because mainstream media, you know, TV, sitcoms, we're not really talking about that, but to an extent, they're hanging on for dear life. Morning Joe and Zika, or as I like to call her, Meager Brzezinski.
The Zika virus,
Right, this, I don't even know what it is. It is this logolalic, logorrhea nonsense of, she plays the school marm, the myth, kind of like the Fibissima face of, you're always upset. There's an expression, the blank in the punch bowl, that's her, the school marm, the one, the killjoy, the buzzkill. This is it. Always upset, always trying to act upset. And Joe's still trying to figure out, what do I do with this rat's nest on top of my head? I don't know what's going on. I want to be, no, really. Joe Scarborough wants to be, David, listen, a rock star. Yeah. He wants to be a musician. Deep down inside, he says, I don't want this. I've never wanted this. I want to be a musician.
And how'd I wind up being the metrosexual poodle of Mika here?
If you want to laugh, please watch at any time during the InfoWars Christmas party. Pull out some Joe and his band playing at the cutting room here in New York. Just go ahead and notice.
Do they do rag mop or?
No, they do popcorn. Bum, 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 bum. I'm really.
I remember that one, I'm afraid. Yeah.
But what's happening is you have these people who are hanging on for dear life. And then last night watching David, I thought I was going to, and I never laugh by myself. I don't laugh a lot anyway, but they actually had some Jake Tapper on CNN. They literally had, I think, 12 votes, 12, 15, some guy at a rest stop in Dothan, who knows? And they began to extrapolate because they couldn't wait for this news. It was the ridiculous coverage I've ever seen. So I hope Roy Moore takes a lesson from Al Franken and says, this is far too important for me just to concede. I'm not.
Keep it in the news. Let's keep this thing churning. Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to be right back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Lionel. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lionel. And, of course, he comments on culture and especially on television. I want to get his comments now on Homeland, the television show, Homeland's pending character assassination of Alex Jones, portraying him as a potential assassin of the president. What do you think about that, Lionel?
By the by, quickly, Rockford Files, Mike Kerb, you're killing me, man. You're killing me. Remember Angel? Anywho.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Look,
Pappy. Yeah.
Do these people understand that Alex thrives on not only attention but and I say this is the best way because everybody in the business does. This is his oxygen. Now that's number one. Ignore him. I'm not trying to tell you how to ignore him. It's like the word they say the worst abuse you can do to a child is indifference. Not, it's worse. So if you really are so perturbed, they're doing this because they need Alex. This is not, they have to jazz this up. So the people they're going to pick, they're not going to pick somebody, some obscure, like you and I would refer to. I mean, some whatever. No, they want to pick somebody that everybody knows. So it's a tribute to Alex, number one. It fortifies and bolsters Alex, which is the opposite of what they want to do. But here's the best part. If you're going to do it, don't come up with the fact where this character is the assassin. Have some lunatic somewhere be inspired or whatever it is. But no, you're not even getting this story. No, it doesn't work this. Now, let me pull a Steve Bannon for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching this right now, do you know who Homeland's making fun of? Not Alex Jones. Not David Knight. You.
Yeah.
You, because they're making fun of you because you're some hick, some rusticator, some rube, some hayseed, some lunatic tinfoil hat. And by the way, David, it's not tinfoil. We haven't worn tin in years. It's aluminum. Now, but the point is.
Yeah, the deplorables. They're coming after the deplorables, aren't they? Yeah.
This fuels us. What are you nuts? Thank you, Homeland. Now, does Alex get a residual? This is the greatest because to show you how stupid these people are, I would break into this writer's room and say, excuse me, we're facing an existential threat right now. And we are being killed by little Vimeos and phones, and you're mentioning the king of alternative media? I don't know what that was all about just now, but there we go. And there we have a picture of my stuff, which I appreciate.
That's right.
But anyway, aside from that, these subliminal things, it's like a Kubrick film. It's like a Bertolt Brecht play. What is this?
Or somebody just punched the wrong button. So we always look for alternative motives here because we're conspiracy investigators.
That's right. That's what they say. But the thing is that, listen, we are proud of this. You've just bolstered this. David, do you know how many people watch you? Do you have any earthly idea? No, because you can't. It's impossible because luckily for them, they've decided to look over different ways of the metrics. While they're playing with overnights and Nielsen and then radio PPMs and all this nonsense, this thing grows and grows and grows. So the bottom line is simply this. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you.
Thank you
for being who you are. And thank you, Homeland, because just when you think, just when I think sometimes, you know what? Maybe David, we should just kind of back up a little bit. Maybe kind of tone it down. No. Just when I think I'm out, they drag me back in. This fortifies me. You never know. You don't know you're over the target until you get flack. It's the old expression. You don't get flack until you're over the target.
Well, you know, if they're going to give Alex residuals off of this, they'd have to give Hillary residuals off of this. Or maybe Trump. Because it's kind of interesting, the little pirouette that they did. You know, first they were setting up this character who was their female president to be this compassionate liberal.
Right.
And then there was going to be a template for Hillary Clinton. And then when President Trump won, they did like some kind of a transgender swap or, you know, transplanted the party or whatever and made her into what they saw Trump as, which was, you know, an authoritarian dictator or whatever, which is the way that they see President Trump, but using the same person, the same actor, the same character.
And it goes to show you how they banked on, because she told everybody, oh, I've got this one. I'm going to win. Yeah. How do you think you get all the speaking fees? How do you think all that pay for play stuff? You don't get this unless she's the best con person ever, con man, con woman in the world. But what this is affirmation of how important, how critical this thing is. And I got to tell you something. Right now, as we speak, nobody has any idea how mainstream media news are scared out of their minds. Did you see this past week when the Tribune Washington had a CIA, a guy who's sending draft letters to the CIA saying, how is this? Is this all right? Great. Yeah. Keep it up. This is Mockingbird. We thought that was then. It's devolving. Oh, no. It's devolving before our very eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you're talking about the popular culture here too, we've also got Alec Baldwin saying that he's thinking about doing a one-man Trump impersonation. And when I saw that, I thought, well, how'd that work out for Michael Moore? You know, they got this spat back and forth. Michael Moore said, I only intended to be there for 12 weeks. Well, did he intend to only ever sell at max about 75% of the theater?
He Let called me tell you it
something. Terms of my surrender. Maybe the terms of his surrender was, I absolutely can't embarrass myself longer than 12 weeks. I don't know.
Let me tell you something. This is as good as it's getting. You've got this bilious, bloated, you know, this thing, this constipated look. That's the essence. You know, I got to tell you something. There was a time, we go back to days of Rich Little, where there were people who did real impersonations. Remember when Tina Fey did Sarah Palin? And they said, wasn't she brilliant? I said, who can't do Sarah Palin? Plus, she looks like Sarah Palin. This is not mimicry. Yeah. Alec Baldwin, if this is going to be, again, this bloated, bilious buffoon out there on the boards in a script written by some angry 20-year-old millennial who drops F-bombs left and right, it's not going to work. And let me also tell you something. When it comes to ticket metrics, you cannot believe what's available on Broadway immediately. So he's going to do this, and he's going to – and listen, he's right now, he is hot. Because not only do the Democrats not have a political platform to talk about, but political humor. The days of Dick Gregory, Mort Saul, Carlin, Bill Hicks, there are none. It's gotten so bad that Bill Nye is Carl Sagan. Everything is devolving from every aspect there is. And I feel sorry for young people today because there was a time in this country where we really had, honestly, people who were funnier, and their comedy was not replaced by, again, the drunk heckler in the back of the comedy club, who has nothing better to say because our political discourse has been inspired by the way we handle things on Twitter.
Well, look at the early days of Saturday Night Live when you had gifted comedians like Bill Murray or Eddie Murphy or whatever, all these, Chevy Chase, what they would do some very funny stuff, but a lot of them fell flat on their face when they did a movie because they couldn't sustain it very long. And that was even a problem with Saturday Night Live in the early days when they had talent, when they had good writers, they would sometimes let the thing go on too long. How is he going to stand up there wearing a blonde wig and do a one-man show? I mean, he's going to find out after about two or three days that he's the only person in the theater. It really will be a one-man show because nobody's going to want to sit there and just watch him do this shtick over and over again. It's a tired trope, even watching it on Saturday Night Live on a weekly basis.
Johnny Carson, whom we remember, who was the godfather of this, and others as well. Even Jack Parr, who was in his day pretty... remember when we used to think that the Smothers Brothers was like, whoa, that was so controversial.
they were so edgy,
But Johnny Carson said, if you go out, he says, you got to be even-handed. Because if you go after one, you lost half your audience. You never knew what he was. You never even knew.
Right.
And by the way, another thing, too, is, do you realize one of the big myths, too, and I found myself saying it, remember the old days, David, how great Walter Cronkite was? You know what? Walter Cronkite wasn't no good. No, that great. Nobody talked about the fraud of the JFK investigation. Nobody talked about Watergate. Nobody talked about Vietnam. He only came in at the last minute when everybody and their mother was protesting. Then Walter Cronkite says, you know, I don't think this is a good idea. Oh, the courage. We now have created this new trope that when we were kids, oh, it was so much better. No, it wasn't. We knew more.
They were all saying the same thing. We had three networks. They're all saying, and he would come in with the final punctuation point. Well, that's the way it is, you know, and that was the way it was because that's the only information we had.
And we didn't hear anything until the next day. We would actually not hear. We were in like an information blackout. Now, through this unique, we are overwhelmed with so much information, we know nothing. That's the paradox.
Now it's exactly. We have a lot of information. No understanding, no knowledge. We try to provide context here with Lionel. And that's it for our show. I'm David Knight. And, of course, you can find Lionel on YouTube, Lionel Nation, Twitter, Lionel Media, and also LionelMedia.com. That's it for our show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you.